now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast. I was going to see if let me make up something, but then nothing came out. A weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, a peace conference between the Separatists and the Republic delegates is interrupted by Lux Bonteri, the late son of a Separatist senator, who involves Ahsoka in a dangerous search to find justice for his mother's death. There will be the return of Death Watch! Lux is a moron, and everyone invading Ahsoka's bubble space. We're talking about a friend in need this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
That's good. You're going to get a cool shirt as soon as I get a chance to make you.
I know, we were talking about that.
Yeah,
I love Star Wars. I've got I could wear a different Star Wars shirt for probably about 2 months in a row right now without repeating. So I'm excited about, and this is a different kind of Star Wars shirt than have. It's kind of flowery and a different material, so.
Yeah, but it's brown, so it's still it kind of reminded me of it's a fall, it's a brown color and it's floral, but it has the Millennium Falcon and an X-Wing on it and stuff. But I got it for, myself, but I thought it was a women's large and it's a men's large and it just doesn't fit me. So, Chris, congratulations. You won shirts.
Men's large is my size. Hint, hint, listeners.
Yeah, but it's called Botanical Wars, and it's by a guy. I was tweeting him earlier. What's his name? It's by an artist named, if it will load, Josh Lane. And I got it off of Society 6, and it's his thing is Josh LN. It is called Botanical Wars, and has little lightsabers on it too and stuff. But bummer, it's too small on me. But Chris gets it now, so congratulations. To wait and Thank get you. Another one.
I just got a package in the mail today from Dario with more candy, so that means you got one coming. I wish you would have gotten it today so we could candy it up today.
I know, but I still have a little leftover candy, so that's good.
I have
a
little left. We'll pick through it when the time comes and figure out something, but this box is full of much more. It's it's fresh and new and full of exciting bits of chocolate and chocolatey things.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm probably going to be getting mine tomorrow or Wednesday, just because if you send it out at the same time, I think you live closer to him, so it'd probably take an extra day for things to get to me.
You'd think so, but it seems it seems like when he mails them to us, they usually come on the same day. This is the first time I've gotten mine first, so.
Yeah, other than the very first time when you originally got them and I didn't.
Yeah, well, that was in the old days.
That was a dark age of J-Guys and Jedi, where I would just whine and buy a convenience
Listen
store.
To me eat candy.
and I would go and buy convenience store candy on Tuesday nights before we recorded on Wednesdays. So it was a different time back then. I've got better. Yeah. Though I'm excited too, because I saw that they're releasing the new Forces of Destiny. And I know I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but I haven't seen the new episodes that dropped today yet, but I did see the first one, and they brought back Sabine's Mandalorian bounty hunter friend, Ketsu. So she came back, and Hera and Chopper were in this episode, too.
Oh.
No, I wish Hera did more, and I really, really freaking want my Hera toy. I'm 30 years old, goddammit, I want a Hera toy. I need one of Space Mom. That and Ahsoka, because they showed Ahsoka at Celebration not this year. Well, maybe it was this year. Was it this year or last year?
No,
whatever.
Isn't there one with coming out with Leia and Han and the Falcon?
It's Rey and Han.
Rey and Han.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh man, though, I saw my new.
That's got to be set in a very limited time period.
Yep. Though I did see my brand new favorite Star Wars joke. Because you know how, like, everybody's having Porg mania, and, like, the Porgs are, like, the big thing, and people are like, fucking Porgs. It was...
People already hate the Porgs. And people already love the Porgs, and we don't even know what they do. They might be on the screen for 10 seconds, but...
A lot of people love the Porgs, too, and I love the Porgs. I'm so excited for them.
Oh, I saw a woman who was doing... she's probably, like, 19, 20 years old. Yeah, woman. She's doing, you know, reviews of stuff. She was interviewing someone, but she had, it probably had to be like 4 or 5 feet tall, stuffed Porg hanging out in her room. Yeah.
Yeah, I you know Kigurumis, those like animal onesies?
Yeah.
I have one. It's a hedgehog. I really want a Porg Kigurumi really bad.
Ooh, they should make Wookiee ones.
Yeah. But the Star Wars joke I saw, it was...
I could get a Mala one and stuff it.
You know they make those, like, sexy body pillows where they're, like, sexy anime characters, but as a body pillow so you can cuddle with them?
Yeah, nope.
Yeah, those creep me out. Anyway.
We had a roommate like that. And he didn't get he just got the long body pillow, and we called it the girlfriend pillow.
Yeah. Okay, this joke is not going to be as funny now that I've, like, lingered it. But my new favorite Star Wars joke, it was a picture of a Porg sitting beside a dead body in a hospital, and it said, "You've heard of Elf on the Shelf, now it's time for Porg in the Morgue."
Oh my god, yeah, I've been seeing those memes.
Yeah, but I probably laughed far too long at it. And then I laughed about it for days, and then I told all my coworkers about it.
They're coming out with an Elf on the Shelf horror movie.
Are they really? Good, because Elves on the Shelves are creepy. And, like, back when I was a nanny, like, I don't really like dolls and stuff like that. And my nanny kids had an Elf on the Shelf. And they figured out that I hated it. So they just started hiding it in random places that they knew I would find it. Like the refrigerator, or in the dishes, or in the dishwasher. And so I would just, like... open things and there it would be.
I would destroy it. I think the Elf on the Shelf, A, is a horrible thing to do to children. I think it sets a bad precedent. And if I knew a way to get the word out to kids, you know, to somehow, like, I don't know how you advertise to kids without their parents knowing, because their parents can't know. But I would do a service where I had myself and another guy dress up like, you know, like Maytag repairmen. And the kid could call us. We'd come to their house and pretend to be Maytag repairmen, and then we would take the elf out of the house and dispose of it. So that way, you know, to the kid, that the elf doesn't know that the kid sent it to get rid of it, you know? He would have plausible deniability. It was just the Maytag repairmen hate Elf on the Shelf. So he would still get a good report to Santa, but his elf would be out of the picture.
Well, like, I couldn't destroy it because I didn't actually own it. It wasn't mine. It was the family of the kids I nannied.
Don't care. I would have killed it.
I think at one point I hid it, and they found it, and they hid it for me so I could find later again. And
I would have hid it in the furnace. That's where I would have hid it.
And I found it, and I was just like, it's back! Oh, God! But yeah, I can't stand Elves on the Shelves. I think they're so creepy, and they just stare at you.
They're awful. Not the right thing to teach your kids.
Be good as long as this thing is here.
It's why it's trading him for the surveillance state, man. It's telling him, get used to Big Brother watching you, man. Big Brother's a cute little elf. Yeah.
Well, no. There was a thing I saw. I think it was a children's app. And they found out that there was, like,
spyware on it that was collecting information on the kids to market to them and stuff. Yeah, I'm sure.
So my boss is terribly afraid of eyeballs. And for a while now, we've been trying to think of a good prank for him. And we're torn between just sticking googly eyes all over the store, or for Christmas, giving him a jar full of, like, those bouncy balls that are look like eyeballs.
Well, if he has paperwork to go to, stick the googly eyes on the paperwork so as he pulls a piece of paper out, there's an eyeball looking at him.
You're giving my boss far too much credit. Paperwork. You're funny.
Stick him in a porno mag and stick him in his desk.
No. But the thing is, we want to do the googly eyes thing, and then we keep realizing we're the ones that would have to clean it up.
Set it as the desktop on his computer.
I actually have a theory of because it's a habit from when I used to work at a Topic that we needed to face our money, meaning all the money had to be like face up and then facing the same way. And so that's just a habit of mine. Like, I always, when I count money, I face it and stuff. I started noticing I would close at night and I would face up all the money, and then I would come in when he opens and all the money would be face down. And so for the longest time, I was just like, I wonder if it's because he's scared of eyes and it's all staring at him. And he gave me the excuse of like, no, when it's usually it's facing up, so it starts curling. I want it to curl down so like it doesn't like, so it flattens out. And I'm just sitting here going, you're just scared of the money staring at you. Alexander Hamilton is going to stare in your soul tonight.
Here's what you do. You get on his on the work computer that he uses, and you get into the settings for your screensaver. You find out what the picture is he picked for the screensaver, and you put like 59 copies of it. So you have 59 of the same picture in there. Then you put one picture of a staring eyeball in there, and then you just have it cycle through them at 1 minute apiece. So 1 minute out of every hour, all of a sudden a big staring eyeball is going to pop. It'll look like the same screensaver, because when it switches, it's just going to switch from one picture to another, and it'll be the same picture. But then every once in a while, bam, that eye is going to come up for a minute and then go away, and it'll be the picture again.
We don't have screensavers, but we do have desktop backgrounds, because we have backgrounds.
That's what I mean. Your desktop background. Yep.
You could
take a folder. You could make up the folder at your house, put it on a thumb drive. Just come in, put the folder inside a folder somewhere, link the desktop to that folder, and have it cycle through it cycle and change the picture every minute.
Because we have two computers, and one of them, one is Akbar, and it says it's a trap, but that's our actual register. The other computer, we have Background Wars, where we are constantly changing the background to, like, different things, and sometimes it's dumb stuff. Like, I just dove into, like, a Lisa Frank folder and was putting up nerdy Lisa Frank things for, But that's not a bad idea, because he would... Maybe I'll save that for...
It might take him a while, but eventually that eyeball is going to just pop up there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, we've changed it enough. You want to get into the episode?
I'm ready.
All right. A Friend in Need is the 80th episode. We made it episode 80 of Star Wars. Star Wars The Clone Wars, and aired on January 13, 2012. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Dave Filoni, so you know it's going to be a good one. Some extra information for you. Jon Favreau returns to voice Pre Vizsla, yet you might know him as Happy Hogan from the Marvel line. This is also the introduction episode of Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan has been confirmed to appear in the final season of Star Wars Rebels, and she was in the trailer. She is voiced by Katie Sackhoff, who is best known for her work as Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica. All right, guys, pay attention. Hey, you might have zoned out because of that information thing, but pay attention right now. Guys, I just want to throw up there. Please don't drop spoilers for Bo-Katan for Chris. He still hasn't seen the end of the show yet. So, yeah, they might say spoilers and rebels of what happens, but they might not either. You know, season 4 is not out. We don't know if they're going to drop spoilers. And I just want him to experience Bo-Katan for himself. So please don't drop spoilers for Chris. Anyway,
I'm right here.
yeah. So according to series writer Brent Friedman, A Friend in Need was originally part of a larger story arc, including the episodes An Old Friend, The Rise of Clovis, and Crisis at Heart, at the Heart. However, this arc was eventually split, with the later three episodes being completed later in season five. Bo-Katan was not included in the original script of the episode, but Dave Filoni added her in, having plans for the character in the Clone Wars fifth season. The name Bo-Katan was created by Dave Filoni as a nod to his wife's cat. Filoni's wife, Anne, calls her cat Boogie, and Filoni derived Bo-Katan from Boogie Cat Anne.
Okay.
Bo-Katan's soldiers are also called the Night Owls. Her helmet shape is inspired by the shape of a barn owl's face, sketched by Dave Filoni on the back of an airline napkin on a flight back from a recording session. Chieftain Piter's name was inspired by the character Piter DeVries from Dune.
Ah.
The episode was a chance for the Death Watch to evolve. Dave Filoni said they were no longer to be such a crisp, clean army. We wanted to have different types of soldiers, different rocket packs and gear. There are airborne troopers, grappling troopers, and flamethrower troopers. Each have a different unit logo. George Lucas described them in the story meeting as having more of a biker gang feel. In the very first draft, in the very first draft of the script, the alien village was to be made of yak face aliens. Some pieces of concept art bear the name Yakorin, but the story and the role of the villagers underwent significant revisions. They were turned into a much more sympathetic and relatable characters, and the villagers turned into the Ming Po people. And finally, weirdly enough, there wasn't an episode featurette for this episode. So, no episode featurette tonight, guys. Yeah, it's what I was looking for, and I was like, huh. But I'll check for next week's episode. They might not be doing the episode featurettes anymore, so.
You know who else might have a little featurette for us?
Now playing.
I just imagine him, you know, with those old those porno machines, and you would put in a quarter and crank it, and you would like watch a girl from like the 20s or like the turn of the century.
Put in quarter and crank it.
Yoda.
Oh, you'll see girl. Yes.
See Yoda just like slowly stripping as you're cranking this.
I don't know what's happening, but maybe put another quarter in. Try again.
Swamp gas starts coming out of it. But he's so small, he could actually fit inside the machine, so it's just really you're looking inside it and there's Yoda.
Look closer. Closer. Closer.
Okay.
looking closer is the only way it would look big.
Mm-hmm.
Though, I think in our very first episode, maybe it was Ambush, but it was somewhere early, early in season one, we did give Yoda the nickname Tripod.
Not named for Gimmerstick either.
Well, then you'd be like Quad Pod.
All right.
I like this one. I think this is a good one.
Friendship shows us who we really are. In bed.
That is true. That is true. Bed can test friendships a lot.
Yes. Yes.
Very much so. It can make them better or ruin them or make them just really awkward. And you're just like, hey, remember that time like 5 years ago we slept to each other? Yeah, that was bad. Sorry.
And then they go, what do you mean? It was the high point of my life.
Really? I'm sorry. You can have the very awkward thing of someone I dated who was a girl is now married to a man. And she was just like, yeah, sorry. And I was like, it's okay. I get it. But still, ow. Yeah,
people shouldn't apologize for marrying someone else. Come on.
Oh yeah, we're totally good on that part now, and I absolutely love her husband. But it was just one of those things. I was like, it's fine. It hurts right now, but it will laugh about it in 5 years. Okay.
See you then.
I'll be fine. Well, act one.
I'm ready for it.
Actually, question, did you like this episode?
I did. You know I like the one and duns.
Yeah. I mean,
it's been a long time since I've had a one and done. And the one and duns have often been sort of like R2-D2, 3PO comedy ones lately. So, Yeah.
Yeah, so this was definitely one where there was things I really liked about it and then stuff I really didn't like about it. Mostly one character I couldn't stand. So, anyway, Act 1. So, the Clone Wars have been raging for a bit of time now. To try and bring an end to the conflict, the Republic and the Separatists are meeting to negotiate. They've chosen neutral planet of Mandalore to hold the small summit. Padme is joined by Space Mom and Space Dad, Mon Long Nekma, and Bail Baby Daddy Organa. The Separatists are demanding it to be recognized as a legitimate state. Things are really tense. Remember last season when Ahsoka and Padme went to a Separatist side to meet Padme's friend and there was a boy named Lux? And he was all like, hello, Ahsoka, and he was all flirty and stuff. And then his mom died? Well, he just bursts into the room. And he starts his speech by saying he's a loyal Separatist, a patriot, and then ogles Ahsoka up and down saying, and a friend. Wink, wink, and she's smiling. The moment Lux spouts...
Oh, friend.
Friend. The moment Lux spouts that his mother was murdered by Count Dooku, the Separatist senators have him dragged out of the room. Ahsoka follows to make sure he doesn't get executed. Lux gets dragged to a ship where Holoscape Dooku is waiting to chat. Dooku is like, bitch, I hear you coming up on my crew yelling about how I murdered your mama and stuff, you ignorant slut. And Lux is all like, I know you killed my mom, and I will have my revenge. And Lux pushes his recorder thingy on his wrist before adding, and your weave looks dumb. And Dooku is like, oh, no one disses my weave, pat, pat, pat. I will make sure that I will put you with your mom and you're going to get killed. Kill him now. And then he hangs up on Lux. Before the droids can actually kill Lux, Ahsoka arrives and takes out the droids, grabbing Lux's hand, making his teenage boy hormones aflutter. Ahsoka leads him out, calling R2 to make a break for it. They race out to her ship where Mandalorian guards are just hanging out. She commands them to fight the droids and hops on the ship with Lux as the guards and the droids fight it out. Anakin calls to Ahsoka and is like, what did you do? Padme says that the peace talks broke down. And Ahsoka explains that she saved Lux Bonteri in bringing him to Coruscant. Anakin gives the okay to bring him to give him some amnesty. Lux pulls a blaster on Ahsoka, refusing to go with her. He has a plan, and that plan is to kill Dooku with a group that he believes in his cause. Ahsoka is pretty much like, yeah, that's cute, but you're not a fighter. Look, I just stole your gun from you. Let's go to Coruscant. And Lux pulls out a stun gun and shocks her into unconsciousness while commandeering the ship. I actually just thought of something as I was reading that's not in my notes. Why does Dooku always hang up? Why doesn't he watch to make sure it happens?
I know, they always do. They always take off. It's like they don't want to dirty themselves with their peons killing. I don't know. It's a standard supervillain trope, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at least he could be like, a Jedi, blah, blah, blah. And then he could, like, spin some weave of, like, the Jedi interrupted our peace talks today. It's all their, like, I mean, that it would have been spun in his favor way more than just being like, bitch, bye, sure, Jan, sure, goodbye, and then, like, leave, and, like, he doesn't even know if he's killed or not. And he's a Sith Lord, shouldn't he like watching people die?
You'd think so.
Yeah, but, like, I noticed that, like,
he also should know about the incompetence of his underlings, too, especially the droids.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, those were the assassin droids, and I'm pretty sure he probably wasn't expecting Ahsoka to come up. But, I mean, this is Padme. I mean, Padme usually hangs out with, like, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka. One of them's bound to be there.
He just wanted to do the cold-blooded thing and be like, kill him and then disappear, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, that's... I noticed that, and it was just... That was so weird to me. Well, what'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. At first, I was like, ooh, a political episode! And then it goes... And then it starts going towards action right in the first act. Once again, I notice a dominant color in this episode, and that's blue. Lots of shades of blue. There's a very at the very end of it when they escape from the planet. It's a very episode 4 shot, like when the Millennium Falcon first escapes Mos Eisley's spaceport, where you know, they're coming away from the planet and they're sort of turning while they're doing it, and the camera's turning too, and it's just a very mirroring episode 4 shot. Once again, great lighting in this. There's just great light and lighting on everything. And I have a name. I don't know the guy's name, but one of the guys at the meeting, I'm calling him Brain Bucket. You know the guy I'm talking about.
I didn't put him in my notes, but that's the character of why this is connected to the 3 episodes later in season 5.
Okay, so I'll remember him as Mr. Brain Bucket. It looks like he's just got his brain in a metal bowl on top of his head. I love it.
He kind of looked like a butt to me. I kind of called him Butthead.
Yeah, brain. Butthead. How about Brain Butt-Cat?
Brain Butt-Cat. Yes, Brain Butt-Cat.
It's a little awkward, but I'll go with it.
Yeah.
But that's all the real notes I have in this one. It gets going real good.
You know, I as you were saying this, another thing I thought of was, you know, these are big planets who are doing, like, intergalactic trade and stuff like that. They're the only ship pulling away. Shouldn't there always be some kind of ships, like, coming and going from planets at all times?
I guess, maybe, but it depends. Maybe the major port's on the other side of the planet. Maybe it's nighttime and
but they were happens. They were at the Mandalorian capital and it was daytime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I don't know.
Because that was something I liked about this, like,
but then again, also, if you're in space looking down at a planet, like, okay, say you're the camera, there could still be hundreds and hundreds of ships flying away, but they're just too tiny to see, you know?
Yeah.
So we're... It's not like... We're used to Coruscant, too, which is just one big city, so there's... And it's the hub of the galaxy. So there's always... You always see a couple more ships flying around Coruscant, but...
They were pretty far away from the planet. I started thinking about that. It's like when a lot of times, like, we'll be flying to or away from a planet, and sometimes they're the only ship. And yeah. like maybe a rural country planet where they're not very developed and they don't have a lot of cities. Yeah, I get that.
Think about it. The camera is about as far away from the planet as the size of the planet. Okay, which is huge, and it would be like looking down at a map of the United States. And trying to pick out a tractor trailer truck or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There could be hundreds of ships in space. They're just too far away to see. And if light isn't directly hitting them, you're not going to see them anyway. So you can always get away with that, you know. I think it's less plausible when you just see hundreds of ships. If you see hundreds of ships flying into a planet... That must mean there's tens of thousands of them probably flying into the planet, you know?
Yeah. I'm talking about, like, every once in a while, like, as they're leaving, they pass a ship who's coming into port or something.
I mean, if you're up in a spaceship, you're probably only going to be able to see ships that are, like, within a half mile of you, maybe. You know what I mean? Depending on how big they are.
Yeah. Well, I only have a few notes for this. I don't know if this was actually Ahsoka's plan, but she's kind of the reason that the peace talk breaks down. Because as she's running from the droids with Lux, they're going up to the Mandalorian guards, and it makes it look like the droids are attacking the guards. And this would just put the Separatists in a bad light while they're trying to negotiate peace in the war. And furthermore, that is kind of the reason why the peace talks break down with them. So I doubt it was Ahsoka's plan, and the Separatists are the bad guys, but that looks like really bad on her part that she's the reason why the peace talks broke down.
Yeah, but at the same time, that she was told to make sure that nothing happened to him.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the only way she was going to do it at that point. There was probably no way she was going to do it without stopping and killing some droids anyway.
Yeah.
So.
But, like, to get the Mando guards involved, it just makes it look like the droids randomly attack the Mandalorian guards.
It works. I think it kind of works to their advantage by making the Separatists look like the dicks.
Yeah.
So.
And also, kind of on that same point, like, we know because of Episode 3 that the war didn't end at this point. So we do know that. But I do have to kind of wonder what would have happened if Lux didn't show up at all at the peace talks. Because Dooku would probably had to pull more strings to, like, make to mess up all the peace and the peace talks and stuff. But I wonder if that would make people start looking at him in like a different light. They were like, oh, you know, these things are happening and stuff. But I mean, we also saw an example of this where they were having peace talks and then Grievous sent a bunch of robots to like blow up Coruscant and it didn't work. So, but I just thought that would have been like kind of an interesting thing where like, you know, they're on the verge of peace, but then it all just, Dooku does something shitty and it all breaks down again. I thought that would have been a little bit more interesting, but. Yeah.
Oh, also, I'm not calling him Lux from now on. I'm calling him Grunge Hat.
Yay!
So he's Grunge Hat from now on.
I don't know. It kind of reminds me of those like little fur hats that you wear around your ears.
I have a friend whose cat is named Lux.
Aww.
But he's named after the singer Lux Interior, the late Lux Interior.
And my final note for this scene, I don't really remember too much of this episode because we're starting to get into a bunch of episodes that I've only seen once. So it's all relatively new territory to me. And you guys might remember last week I was like, what do you mean Death Watch is in this episode? Cool. I didn't remember that. But I just already in this first act, Lux's grief is just making him not think clearly, and he's just being stupid.
Yeah.
And it's understandable. I mean, he is in a lot of grief, and he lost his mom, and his dad died in the war. So, I mean, he lost both of his parents very recently, so it's understand. But at the same time, kid. You don't just walk into peace talks. And how did you get by all the fucking guards to get in there in the first place? Because I'm sure Satine wasn't, like, expecting you.
Yeah, but I bet he still got, like, some clout or, you know, they saw him and they were just like, oh, I'm not going to stop him, you know.
Because even the Separatists, they were like, oh, that's Bertomri's son. What is he doing here?
Yeah.
Blah, blah. And I was like, child, come on, man. But that's all I have for Act 1. You want to move on to Act 2?
Act 2. They're smooching in Act 2.
Oh, God. I think that's the moment that Ahsoka's just like, yeah, I'm a lesbian now. Actually, a lot of people do write Ahsoka as a lesbian, and I'm so down for that. Anyway, Act 2.
Yoda's down for that, too.
So we're all down for it.
Yoda's Force Ghost will just sit right here and observe.
We're all down for that at Jagas and Jedi. It's fine. Actually, I think it was Aaron. This is way off topic. I'm so sorry. They released the trailer for Forces of Destiny, and there was a scene where Jyn Erso from Rogue One was with Sabine. And I just tweeted, where is it? Here we go. I just tweeted, shut up, Jyn and Sabine are together. And our listener, Aaron Henley, wrote me, are we talking together in the episode, same room, or romantically? And I wrote, in the same episode, but I'd be down for that last choice, too.
All of the above,
because I would be so down for Sabine and Jyn together. But anyway, moving on. Act 2. Ahsoka wakes up to find herself on the planet of Karlak. Her lightsabers are gone, and Lex is outside in a cherry blossom snow-covered grounds. Ahsoka is like, little bitch stole my shit! And then runs outside. Just as she's starting to yell at him, a group of Mandalorians arrive and surround them. Their leader, Bo-Katan, says that Lux is late. Ahsoka immediately recognizes that they're part of the Mandalorian terrorist group, Death Watch. Meanwhile, R2 has found Ahsoka's lightsabers. Back outside, Bo-Katan asks for the information and wonders who Ahsoka is. Ahsoka lies that she's Lux's betrothed, and Bo-Katan slaps Ahsoka on the ass and calls her skinny. Bitch, you're skinnier than she is. Bo-Katan says that the snow is moving in and they need to head out. Ahsoka tries to warn Lux about Death Watch, but the Mandos grab R2, who is now hiding Ahsoka's lightsabers, and make Ahsoka come along. They arrive at the Death Watch camp, where the other Mandos are torturing droids, which I guess is better than torturing people?
I don't know, but the droids were saying what when Scott and I would make cardboard robots to run them over, they would say the same thing as we ran them down. Why?
Yeah, it's just creepy, but you guys know I don't like robots. R2 does not like this turn of events. Bo-Katan leads them in a tent where their leader will be meeting with them. Lux is all giddy about his plan, and Ahsoka is like, you don't actually have a plan. Oh my god. And Lux is like, nah, boo, it's a great plan. I'll give them this holo tracer thing, and Death Watch will go kill Dooku. Ta-da! And Ahsoka is like, this isn't Mama Padme or Peacekeepers, you idiot. These are terrorists. They will kill you so fast. And every time Ahsoka starts to criticize him, someone interrupts. Just as she's explaining that Death Watch are Jedi killers, Lux sees someone coming in and freaking kisses her. Happy Hogan, I mean Pre Vizsla, strolls in and kicks Ahsoka out. He pretty much bullies Lux into handing over his information. Meanwhile, R2 is taken to a broken down droid, to a tent full of broken down droids to reassemble for target practice. In a scene from my nightmares, they beg to be put back together. Ahsoka is taken to another tent where she finds a group of women. Their leader, named Trila, explains that they were kidnapped from a nearby town and forced to serve Death Watch. At dinner, Ahsoka is pretending to be a server and gives a drink to her betrothed, telling him not to choke on his stupidity. Before Pre Vizsla can chat, a man storms into their tent. He's Chief Piter, and he is not happy that his people are enslaved. Pre Vizsla promises that they'll leave and return his people tomorrow, as his men snicker in the background. Lux continues to be an idiot, saying that Death Watch ain't half bad, even though death is in their name. What do you think of Act 2?
He is an idiot.
He's so dumb.
Especially when they're just like, oh yeah, we'll bring your people back. It's just like, oh god.
I know we're not in Act 3, but I half expected them to just return them dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, just that's exactly what I thought when they started snickering like that.
Yeah, like, you know, like old, like medieval things where they would just stick, like, bodies in catapults and, like, shoot them over the wall. Like, I was just waiting for that. Like, just, but I guess they wouldn't get the rating on Cartoon Network.
Well, we're sort of going back to the last arc with the Slaver's arc where we find out Ahsoka's just a bad actress when she has to play a part.
I have that note, too.
She has a hard time staying in character. And,
my actual note is, this is the season of Ahsoka awkward acting. First she can't act like a slave. Now she's awkwardly pretending to be Luke's fiancé. Anakin, please give this child an Uta Hagen book or something.
And then old Grunge Hat pulls the oldest trick in the book. Quick, we must pretend to kiss. Oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
Yoda uses it all the time.
God, this episode should be called Everyone Invades Ahsoka's Bubble Space, because first she gets slapped on the ass, and then she gets kissed, and she looks so uncomfortable in both scenes.
I notice in the animation, they've got curtains looking great. The way like when people come in and out of like fluffy curtains... Mm-hmm. Boy, they've got them looking really realistic now. I just noticed that there were, and I think they figured that out because there's several curtains in this episode, and they're just like, hey, let's curtain this up now that we know what we're doing.
I mean, the new technology is like just so good this season. I mean, we've been saying it all mm-hmm. season long how good it is.
And it might be the technology and a combination of them just knowing how to use it better and to better, you know, becoming better animators. But either way, it looked beautiful. And my other only, it's just a minor little note. When they go into the village, the villagers' town, I love their houses. I love the little, like, wind turbines on the top of their houses. I thought that was a neat little touch. They had those sort of weird, like, vertical wind turbines, but they were also kind of flower petally, and they're just slowly turning on the top of every house. I thought that was a neat little touch. It's very Star Wars to have, you know, sort of stuff like that without an explanation, just sort of happening. You know, there's a backstory of how their village works, and you know, stuff like that. You know, that was probably what powers each house, and you sort of pick it up visually. I thought that was a cool little touch, and I mean. The last big story was way back, I think it was the second season, where they went to the Cigar Face planet where we had snow.
Yeah.
And it was different. That was more like snowstorm snow. This is just sort of a nice light snowfall, and I thought it just looked beautiful.
I had a note about that too, because I really like the design of this planet, because they also have those cherry blossom trees.
Yes.
And so every once in a while, you would have pink petals mixed in with the snow.
With the snow.
And it was such a minor thing, but every once in a while you would just see like a little bit of pink flutter by, and it was really pretty.
And it was a snowy world without it being like Blizzard World or anything like that. It was just a nice little snowfall, and the way that it was lit with that snowfall looked very, it was really neat. It was a really neat environment, a new kind of environment.
It wasn't Cigar Face World, and it wasn't Hoth. It was like a brand new, unique world, and it was all because of those cherry blossom trees.
It was a world that probably had seasons, you know, instead of just being an ice world or whatever. You know, probably sometime you would see grass underneath there, but they were there in winter or something. So I just thought it was really neat.
So for my notes, I've already said two of them between Uta Hagen and everyone making Ahsoka uncomfortable. I don't ever want to feel bad for droids, unless it's R2, Chopper, or K2SO. But I kind of feel a little bad for the droids being tortured by the Mandos, just a little bit. But at the same time, I was just like, this is really uncomfortable.
It's like R2 in the Land of Misfit Toys.
Yeah, and like the one that made me the most comfortable was the droid that was like, we used to be battle droids, but now we're slaves. And the other ones that were just like, please reassemble us, please reassemble us, please reassemble us. And I was just like, oh, stop it. Stop talking. Oh, it was so, I know they're like the good guys, but it's creepy. Ugh, it's not K2SO, who I love. He's like the only droid that I'm just, that and Chopper. Chopper's a little murder bot, and I love him. I'm so excited for season 4 of Rebels. Actually, it might be running by the time this episode comes out, so I am currently excited for the season 4 of Rebels. Can't wait. So I do like seeing the change in Pre Vizsla since the last time we had him. I think it was back in season 2. It might have been season 3, but I'm pretty sure it was season 2. He was playing the diplomat, and he was acting really friendly with Satine. And it was before it was revealed that he was the leader of Death Watch. And now in this episode, though, like, he's not diplomatic at all. He's just a crazy guy who's just ready to destroy people.
Yeah, they've definitely become more biker, more feral in the wild, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just a nice change because, you know, he was the diplomat of the moon of Mandalore. Like, he was the governor there. And he was all, like, fancy and, like, talking with Satine, and he had artwork in the background. And now he's just a crazy asshole. And, you know, I feel like Lux's first red flag should have been when Pre Vizsla pretty much bullied him to giving in the information. And when he was just pretty much, look, you can either give it to me or I'll kill you. And Lux is just like, okay, you're great. You're a nice guy. And I'm just like, Lux, all the red flags. Come on, boy.
No, it doesn't matter. He's focused in on his revenge.
Yeah,
so that's a very Star Wars theme. How revenge clouds your vision and messes up your judgment.
Well, easy there, Kylo. Red flags. And so my last note is, like I said, I forgot a lot of what happened in this episode. So I completely forgot about Tryla and her people. And so I was just like, the season has a lot of themes of slavery between last arc, the people in this arc, and the droids.
Yeah, well, you know, as things get worse in the galaxy, you know, stuff like slavery and corruption are going to get worse, you know?
It is Mandalore, so there must be corruption!
Corruption!
All the corruption! Mandalorian corruption! God, that fucking episode. I was thinking when we do our series recap of, like, all the episodes, like, I was thinking, like, picking our top 10 favorite episodes, but probably also picking our least favorite episodes.
We could have special categories, like, which is the most corrupt episode?
Well, that would only be the one.
Exactly.
But that would maybe be an honorable mention, because that episode, still to this day, I'm just like, it's not the worst, because, good lord, Grievous Intrigue is a nothing episode. And then we have Overlords and stuff. But, I mean, that one, that is probably my least favorite of all the Mandalorian episodes, because, God, I would have gotten drunk if I was drinking. every time they said corruption. Ugh, anyway. That's all I have for Act 2.
You ready to make this one and done?
Yeah, let's polish this puppy off.
All right. I love polishing puppies. I got a big tub of puppy polish right here. And a puppy brush.
Every 2 weeks, we wash our pug, and Sunday was her bath time, and she hates it. But we love washing her, and she just starts making these noises like, ugh.
Yeah, pugs are I met a great pug last time we went garage sailing. They had her tied out, and like, pugs are just not aggressive, mean dogs. They just almost, I mean, I'm sure you can have an aggressive, mean pug. But I see a pug in someone's yard, and it was on a leash, it was on a run. I'm gonna walk right over to it because I know they're a pug. They're itchy little bastards, and they like to be scratched and petted. And this thing was just like leaping up in the air, like doing that weird little like it's not a bite because you don't even really feel their teeth, but they're just like rah, 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 with their weird little flat mouth. I love those animals.
Yeah, they're just. Our pug's not really a dog. It's more of a cat. It acts more like a cat. I wish it was like
they're
the
like
Batman.
A little troll. They're just great.
Have you seen the pug video of the pug that yells Batman?
Yes.
Yeah, the Batman. My dog. That's how she barks. She just goes, but she doesn't say Batman. But she just goes Batman.
Yeah.
Batman. Like that's her. She doesn't even bark like a real dog.
Well,
they're so
bred to be like that that they're like kind of in a way monstrosities that shouldn't be.
there's a video about inbreeding dogs, and they're like, and look at the pug. It's a monstrosity on mankind.
Pugs have been bred so much they have a lot of problems too. They have breathing problems. They have skin conditions and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, you know, that's what comes with them. And, like, greyhounds have bad hips and stuff. So when they get old, their hips go and stuff. So it's from breeding. You know, if you want a dog that's going to last longer than any and be healthier than any other dog, you're best off with, like,
a mutt.
Just a plain old mutt. Yep.
Yep.
Muttly mutt.
I also saw a thing.
But pugs are pugs. All of that, there's all whatever it is that added up into their mutant. Also adds to this personality that they have that's just hilarious and fun.
Whenever I'm around
a pug, I'm just laughing the whole time and with joy and hilarity.
our pug, she's a white pug and she used to have a black face, but she's so old now she has a white face now. But she's also, she has cataracts.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes if it's dark, she'll just run into things.
Yep. They're making special collars for dogs like that have a little thing on them that bumps ahead of them so they won't hit their head for blind dogs. But you could probably do it for almost blind dogs, too.
Yeah, she's fine during the day, but at night when I have to take her out, our stairs have these little column things. And she runs into it just about every night. And sometimes when we didn't have power during the hurricane because we have a street lamp in our front yard, she would just run into the stairs coming back because she couldn't see them.
Bump.
Yep. And then she would just like run into them and just kind of walk a little bit off to the side and then come back and run into them again. And we just have to pick her up and put her on the stairs.
Well, Paul Spataro had a blind dog like that would just sort of run around and like sonar, you know, bump into something correct, go forward, bump into something correct until it found Chris Tyler's leg. And then it would just sit there and lick this one little portion of Chris Tyler's leg below the knee.
Oh.
And it did that like 2 years in a row too. The second year it found him again and was just like, ah, there it is. Anyway,
dogs are great. Good doggos, good puppers, doggos. They're the best. All right, we don't deserve dogs. They're too pure. All right, so Act 3.
Act 3.
The next morning, Deathwatch rolls into Piter's town with the women that he promised. Until Mormando's jetpack in from the sky. Vesla hands over Trila, then promptly stabs her in the back with the Darksaber. You know, the same Darksaber that will eventually come into Sabine's care in Rebels? Yeah, that one. And he gives his word to kill everyone in the village. Man, I can't talk tonight. Lux is like, how did I not see this coming? Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Ahsoka's ready to kick some ass. She picks up a pole and fucking spears a dude. Though she's not much help without her lightsabers that R2 still has back at the village. The Death Watch get her tied up in cables and bring her down, and they drag her back to camp. Back at the worst camp, day camp ever, R2 has repaired all the droids just as Death Watch is arriving with Ahsoka. R2 is like, oh hell no, and tells the droids to be ready to help his friend. He rolls out and peeks into the tent with Ahsoka. Pre Vizsla is not happy that Lux brought a Jedi with him. Lux calls them murderers, and Vizsla is like, that's cute, since you want to murder Dooku. And the Jedi are no different from him, so yeah, boy. And R2 crashes in, causing a distraction long enough to give Ahsoka her lightsabers. Then, in the coolest moment ever, Ahsoka backflips and kills four guys at once. Yes! Queen! She faces off against Vizsla and gets kicked outside where R2's droid friends are waiting. They fight the Death Watch while Ahsoka and Vizsla keep fighting. She strikes his jetpack, causing it to beep. He throws it off before it explodes. Lux pulls up in a speeder, pulls the speeder around and picks up Ahsoka. Vizsla sends Bo-Katan and her crew after them. One by one, Ahsoka and R2 fend off the Death Watch until Bo-Katan lands on the speeder to fight her. With some fancy driving from Lux, they throw Bo-Katan off the speeder and arrive at their ship and fly away into space. R2 tells Ahsoka that the escape pod has been activated, and she realizes that Lux is trying to escape. She races there to find that he's already locked the door. He says he can't go with her to Republic. She begs him that they can work together, and he says they make a pretty good team. They press their hands to each other through the glass and say goodbye. Lux disengages from the escape pod and flies away. The end.
Okay, I only have a few short notes in this. One is, yes, four beheadings.
At once.
At once.
I forgot that was this episode, and it was one of those, like, every once in a while I'll see that gif pop up on Tumblr, and I'm just like, where in Clone Wars was that? And so when it happened, I was just like, I found it! Yes!
And we're getting a theme of R2 getting his own little droid armies.
Yep.
I like that. R2's like General D2. And here's the thing. This is my only real nitpick with this episode. Is, okay, he escapes in the escape pod. How can that escape pod be anything comparable to their ship? You know what I mean?
It's an escape pod.
It's meant to sort of, like, maybe, like, tugboat into somewhere or something. She should be able to just, like, pull right up and tractor beam him back and take him back anyway, you know? She's a Jedi. Yeah. If this guy's getting away in the escape pod, and I don't think she was being like, oh yes, I'd rather this is a good excuse to just let him go. I think she really wanted to take him back to Coruscant. So I think she could have gone and got him, you know what I mean? Just pushing it was a great dramatic moment of pushing the escape pod and then falling away or whatever. But it would have been like, oh, there he goes. Okay, R2, let's go back and pick him up, you know? Because
you know,
that's escape pods are meant to be done. They're meant to be found and picked up by the ship that they came off of. But
I can't remember exactly, but I feel like I saw boosters on it, like booster rockets on the escape pod.
Yeah, but
so maybe
still.
Maybe it can fly, or maybe it's like the
I'm
ghost.
Sure it can fly. He had a little control panel that he was like behind the wheel of. It was just like a little rectangular. It was like a shoebox to fly through space, but I don't think it would be like a real ship where he could go through hyperspace or anything like that. You know?
Yeah.
It seems like she would be able to just swoop right up and grab him. I doubt he has weapons on it or anything like that. It's probably just a beacon.
Maybe it's like the ghost in Rebels because they have that little detachable ship. But even then, that's not hyperspace.
It's also a ship. You know, it's like made like a ship. This thing looks just like a sideways shoebox. It looks like an escape thing. You know, it looks like something you'd find the black box in or something like that. You know, it doesn't look like something that you're gonna fly and evade something with.
You know, also. You have to give Ahsoka credit, like she's wanting to respect his decisions. That being said, he spent the entire 22 minutes being a moron. So...
Right, I'm going to respect your god-awful, stupid decisions that are going to get people killed.
Yeah, I on one hand, like, Ahsoka was respecting his decision, but on the other hand, she doesn't really have much reason to.
Yeah.
He's kind of dumb, so.
But yeah. That's all the notes I had for this episode.
For me, hey, look, R2 saves the day again. And, you know, I wish we had the foresight at the beginning of Clone Wars to just keep a tally of how many times R2 has saved the day. And how, like, Star Wars would have ended if he wasn't there.
Yeah, maybe some that'll be a project someday. Or maybe we can... Maybe we got listeners who are just starting to listen and stuff who can keep a tab and catch us up, and then we can keep the tab from then on.
Yeah, but, like...
Yeah, and we should count all the movies, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, R2's the real hero of Star Wars, mm-hmm. you know. Anakin would have died on the lava planet if
I guarantee he saved the day more than any other single character in Star Wars.
I never noticed it before until the first time you pointed it out, and now I just can't help but to notice it. I was just like, yeah, just shoot R2. You would win.
Yep.
So, I also just kind of feel like the villagers are a bit of an afterthought. You know, if we didn't just wrap up a big slaver arc where we see, yeah, slavery is bad and we know this, I don't think it would have hit the mark as hard. Because they didn't have to really explain.
They were just there to be like, look how horrible these people are, you know.
Yeah, and
they couldn't. It wouldn't be enough for them just to be horrible to Grunge Hat and Ahsoka. It would have to be, they had to have somebody for Grunge Hat to see the errors of his way, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because the thing is, like, they are just a big plot point. Like, we know nothing about these people. It doesn't even mention that they're the Ming-Po. I found that out in the episode information stuff. And we don't know anything about Tryla, so her death isn't that big of a tragedy. I don't feel really much of anything when she got killed. I was just like, oh no. Okay. She died.
Yep, it's not good, but you didn't get to really... Tryla, we hardly even knew you.
You didn't try hard enough.
You didn't Tryla hard enough.
Yeah. I don't know, I just... I'm going to get to this note later, but they could have cut out some of the R2 stuff to add, like, some more background with his people, and then maybe it made more. But I'll just go ahead and say my R2 note now. Let me scroll down the page. Okay, so the thing is, like, about the R2 stuff, I'm not a big droid person, but they would not have escaped without R2 making friends and fighting back.
Oh, no, for sure.
So, like, it was important.
R2's more important than, say, like, Mon Mothma to the Rebellion.
Yeah, so it's kind of one of those things of, like, with the village people, it, like, maybe just, if they would have just made it the droid B plot, and, like, you know, just have it them doing that, I mean, then it would have been like, yeah, these droids are fucking fighting back, but it was split between the droid plot and these people, and neither, the droid
those
fighting
people,
back...
Those people, you mean the village people?
Yeah, the village, the YMCA.
I'm just telling you, I'm rocking out right now to some village people right now, ever since you said that.
Young man, you're a stupid moron. You say, young man.
Grunge Hat.
Don't trust the Death Watch. Young man. Anyway, but yeah, like, it just with that time split between R2 and the robots and then the Ming-Po people, there's just neither quite hit the mark, but at the same time, the droid plot was more important because those were the droids that allowed them to escape. So I just kind of wish they tidied that up a little bit, you know? Or maybe just have a person.
Well, like, R2's so nice to fix up the droids, and then he just marches them to their death. But they get to get a little revenge on their torturers, so that's okay, too.
Yeah. Okay, again, I want to say, I know that Lux is not is grieving and not thinking clearly, but he's trusting a group with the word death in their name. The boy is an idiot. And the reason I don't like him in this episode is because the first time we met him, he was very smart, and he was very well-versed, and he was able to, like, sass back and forth with Ahsoka and, like, keep her on her toes. And he just comes off as really stupid now.
You know why? Because he is stupid, but he was stupid before, but he was in his home element. He's not stupid. Well, you don't watch Game of Thrones, but he's stupid in a you-know-nothing Jon Snow sort of way. He's smart and intelligent and precocious, but he's a kid, and he doesn't know anything. But when Ahsoka met him before. He's there with his mom. He's all dude'd up, and he's confident, you know? And, mm-hmm. and that's the thing about teenagers, young teenagers like that age, is they can come off as being, especially smart ones, they can come off as being more mature than they really are. But now he's stripped of all of that, you know? Now he's just some kid off looking for revenge with, you know, he's without a family and without his status. And it turns out he doesn't know diddly squat, you know? So, yeah, we're just seeing him getting knocked down a few pegs, you know?
The thing is, like, yes, he is intelligent, but don't trust a group with the word death in their name.
Yeah. But
that's very base premise.
What are we talking about, though? We're talking about, what, 14 to 16-year-old kids when we're talking about him and Ahsoka. And Ahsoka's much more trained than he is. And also Ahsoka's battle-weary and has run into Death Watch before. He's operating in the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and yeah.
You know, I was trying to remember that. I don't think Ahsoka's ran into Death Watch, but you know she's probably heard about them.
Right,
but
right.
I can't. I don't think. I wanted to look back, and I forgot to look back and check this because it came up when I was writing it.
No, I guess it was just Obi-Wan and Anakin, wasn't it, that were there?
I think so, but I'm not positive. I'm not 100% positive because I meant to look that up and I forgot to. But I mean, you know she's heard of them because she knows who they are.
Right.
So, but I just like.
And she also has had more experience with bloody gangs of criminals and stuff like that with, you know.
Yeah, I really liked Lux in his very first appearance, but this time it just rubs me so wrong.
I mean, has she had experience with Hondo? Or has that just been Obi-Wan and Anakin?
I don't think she's had experience with Hondo to this point.
Mm.
I don't think she has, but she has experience with people like Aurra Sing and Cad Bane.
Yeah,
That we know, but I don't think she has met Hondo at this point, from what I know, because he's Obi-Wan's best friend.
right.
Obi-Wan! Now I'm so happy you're here, my friend! you're my best friend, Jedi. Obi-Wan's just like, ugh. Stop it. Get off me. Ugh, don't touch me. Though I have to say about Ahsoka, she holds her own against Pre Vizsla.
Yes, she does.
Better than Obi-Wan did in season 2. If Obi-Wan was losing against Pre Vizsla, and Ahsoka she needed the help in the robot.
Obi-Wan's more zen calm. Ahsoka's losing her cool. She's not really losing her cool. She's getting angry in this one, you know. I mean, decapitating four people, and the way she did it just sort of like, yeah, how about that?
It was beast mode Ahsoka.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. She had a bit of passion going in this one, so.
Yeah.
A passion against them and also a little bit of I told you so for a grunge hat.
Yeah. So I feel like the one thing I would have liked to see in this episode, and just a tiny little thing, would been her either telling Satine or Satine finding out that Death Watch is back, because they're such a big problem to Satine. And even if it was at the very end, like, Ahsoka comes back and, like, just calls Satine, she's like, I ran into Death Watch. And just seeing, like, Satine's reaction, just like, oh my god, they're back. You know, because they're such a problem for her.
Right.
And not to give away too much, they're going to be a problem for her going forward. I would have liked that, because at least then it would put the ball in Satine's court to be like, okay, let's prepare more and stuff like that. That tiny scene, that's all I wanted, was just to see Satine's reaction that Death Watch is back and fucking up people. So it's really nice to have a one and done in the middle of a very heavy season.
Yeah, you know what my opinion is on that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there
I could use
been...
I would be happy a one and done in between every arc would be really to my liking.
Pretty much like there's Shadow Warrior, and even though Shadow Warrior is tacked onto the Mon Cal arc, it really stands on its own. And then the two droids episodes are connected, but they also really stand on their own too. But they are like
they're each their own story. You could watch both of those separate of each other and not miss any story details from either of them.
So it's nice just to get like a nice like breather episode in the middle of such a heavy season, and we're about to get into even more heavy arcs. Like, so it's really nice to have that. And my last note was, I kind of want to start something that's called Fall of the Darksaber, and just kind of noting how the Darksaber goes from Pre Vizsla, and we know that eventually Sabine Rebels will get it.
I think there was a movie called Winchester 22 or something like that that just followed a gun from person to person, from owner to owner in the Old West.
Yeah. But I think that'd just be fun just to... And it, like, every time we see the Darksaber, be like, this is where it is now. Let's note it. Note. So, since we missed our two Saving the Day notes, we might as well do something productive right. like that. Something productive. But that's all I have. Do you have anything else for the episode?
No.
All right. Well, how do you support up Chris and why?
Okay. Oh, I think you're going to be surprised at this one. I gave this one a 9.
Wow.
I was going to give it an 8. But I gave it an extra point for those 4 beheadings. That just put it up. Even though it was just, you know, a little detail in there, I was just like, you know what? This goes up to a 9. Because I like it. It was a it's you know, I'm biased towards one and dones. But this is just a nicely balanced Clone Wars episode between story, a little politics, a little action, showing us new stuff while bringing back old characters, and without being like, hey, look, we're bringing back these old, you know, it sort of worked out. It's like a longer arc being carried out with Grunge Hat and Death Watch and stuff like that.
You can tell that Dave had his hands in this one.
Yeah. And Dave Filoni, there's just always a little extra touches, like the camera tilting when the they do it twice in this, when they're pulling away from a planet that just mirrors that shot in episode 4. And I love little touches like that. So, yeah, 9 out of 10. How about that?
Nice. This might make your top 10 of season 4.
It might. It might.
Your top 5 of season 4, I should say. That's coming up soon.
I know we're way more than halfway through.
I think we only have 2 arcs left. Let's see.
Yeah, we can only have like, I think we probably only have like 7 or 8 episodes left.
This was episode 14 out of 22.
So like 8, yeah, we got 8 episodes. So that's like 2 arcs, 2-3 arcs and a 2 arc or 2-3 arcs and 2-1 and dones, or 2-4 parters, or you're saying the next one's a 4 parter, right?
There's a 4 parter, and then 2 episodes I think are 1 and dones. I think I can't remember if these 2
and then
episodes...
like a 2 parter to go out with, probably.
Yeah, and a 2 parter to go out with. But
yeah, that sounds right.
The episode Massacre and the episode Bounty. It's been so long since I see them. I've seen them. I think they're standalones. I'm not positive because I haven't watched them in a while. But yeah, it looks like a 4 arcer, possibly 2 standalones, and then a 2 parter. So it's rolling right along. Well, for me, it is nice to have another one and done breather in a season that's been full of just big arcs and stuff. And it's really great that we got to touch base with Death Watch, because we haven't had them in a while since pretty much season 2. So it's nice to touch base with them. Lux massively brings down the episode for me. I can't with him. But Ahsoka makes up for everything by kicking ass and taking names. You know, the villagers and the R2 plot both needed some polishing, and I don't like droids, so they just super unnerved me, and I don't like them. But it's fun to see what a crazy person that Pre Vizsla is becoming compared to the last time we saw him. And like I said, I wish there was a little touch of what Satine's reaction would have been. But overall, this is a fun little episode, and I just really like watching everybody enjoy Ahsoka's bubble space, and her reactions are just so good, and her acting is terrible. So for me, it's a pretty good episode. I give it a 7 out of 10.
Ooh, wow, I'm 2 points over you. Wow, that's
a
rarity.
I can't with Lux. I can't. And just...
I'm not a big fan of him either, but... And I thought his grunge hat was goofy. It was like, here he is, he's being casual. He's wearing his wool hat, you know.
And also just like I really do think they could have done the villagers better, and I think that like or the R2 plot better. One of those needed to be better, and both of them were weak.
If it was part of it, if it was part of an arc, it probably would have been, you know. But it's probably condensed down.
Yeah. So, but the three episodes that came up after this have nothing to do with this, absolutely nothing, except for the one character guy from what I can remember. Because it's again watching the back half of the show. It's been a while for me, so. Because pretty much I just rewatch Umbara and the Slaver arc over and over and over again, all the time. That's what I usually watch with Clone Wars. And a lot of it is like, if I'm going to sit down and watch one episode of Clone Wars, the back half of the series is usually arcs, so I don't have time to watch 3 to 4 episodes. I only have time to watch one episode. So I usually just watch one and done when I rewatch episodes, so... Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on either iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. So if you like us or dislike us, let us know. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, The General.
All right.
You got two Patrick Delmores.
I know. And they're short, too, so it's not going to kill my voice. I'm sorry. I'm all of a sudden distracted because I got a fucking Japanese beetle flying around my house. It's Japanese beetle season, and they're gonna show up and make my life hell.
See, we have the opposite. It's starting to get colder now, and we live in a forest, so all the cockroaches are like, let's come inside.
It's the same thing. They're both beetle bugs. These are similar. These guys are looking for a place to go and hibernate. And then what will happen is they'll go and they'll hibernate somewhere, and then in the middle of winter when the house is nice and warm, they want to wake up and fly around in my face and bump into my light in my computer screen until I capture them and fling them out my window.
Yeah.
Hate them. Anyway, Patrick Delmore says, Walter Murch also directed Return to Oz, which I love. I love that movie too. You ever seen Return to Oz?
I feel like I've seen it a very long time ago. I haven't seen it recently.
It's one of those ones, if you see it as a little kid, it's gonna haunt you for the rest of your life. It's creepy as hell. It's got some really scary imagery in it. And it's more along the lines of what it's adapted. A lot of it's adapted from Ozma of Oz. And it's more of a straightforward adaptation of the L. Frank Baum books, and there's several really creepy scenes, including the Gnome King and these guys called Wheelers that are people with wheels on their legs and arms. They have these long, like, extended spindly arms and legs, and they wheel on all fours and chase Dorothy around. And it has Dorothy getting shock treatment in the beginning to treat her for her delusions of going to Oz for the first time.
Oh, man, I wonder if they took that from Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, because that was when the spinoff of Once Upon a Time happened, that's what was happening to Alice. She was in the mental institution because she believed
that. They might have gotten the idea from this. This was made in the 80s. I highly recommend it. It's a very surreal, and it's a very good adaptation. I remember reading that book as a kid and being really creeped. It was great and creepy. And this movie really captures the spirit of it. And I think people really hated it because it wasn't a musical, you know, like sequel to The Wizard of Oz. It was just a straight up adaptation of an Oz movie, which nobody does, or an Oz book, which nobody really has done ever before or after that. Because it didn't make no money. And Patrick Delmore says also, Dee Bradley Baker also is the voice of Appa. A palindrome.
The voice of the palindrome clone.
And, okay, we got one from Paul C. Kelly. He says, Rex was stuck between a rock and a hard case. Whoa!
Ah!
Hey-o! By the way, how's your bowling arm? Oh, wait. Sorry, last is the line from the movie The Rock, stated, but Sean Connery's character. Sorry, I don't do a good Sean Connery impression, or I would do it in Sean Connery voice. Wait. Rex not only has a hard case, but also a fives. This is a no-brainer now. Krell, you underestimate the capabilities of the clones. Rex should actually quote another line from The Rock to Krell. I'm relieving you of your command, General. Chris, I listened to your comment about my comment about the Ninja Turtle Nintendo water level reference, which was used as a comparison to water sucking in Season 4, Episode 1. Anyways, funny you mentioned you were more of a 1984 comic fan. I just read Eastman and Laird's first four issues of the original, $10 e-copy on Amazon for the first seven issues. Fantastic. Anyway, here's to the 501st overthrowing Krell. Finish him! Fatality! Land on those Mortal Kombat spikes, you Goro wannabe. Ha!
Finish him.
And okay, here comes the part where I'm singing. Where I'm going to be singing.
You should totally, in that part, try and find the audio clip with the finish him, fatality.
It won't be hard. All right, Alan Middleton says, when Hope was talking about the clones being referred to by their number or name, I was expecting to hear this in the mix. And there's a picture of Bob Seger. And it's, feel like a number. I'm not a number. That's my. And of course, it was followed out by Alan Middleton saying, or, and then I got a name. And I don't know the words to that, but it's like a number, I got a name, which was used to really good effect. Recorded off of vinyl on the Django Unchained. And of course I replied with the Beatles, you know my name, look up my number. Which is, I'll just leave that play in right now. One of my favorite songs of all time, probably one of my favorite Beatles songs of all time. Featuring Danny Zobel. And well, finally we've gotten to that part.
Yeah.
What are we going to eat, Hope?
I have couple packs of Kit Kats I haven't got to, a Ferrero Rocher, and that's it.
Okay, well, I know that's delicious. Have you ever had one of those before?
Huh?
Have you ever had a Ferrero Rocher before?
I actually had one quite recently, because my friend is getting married this month, and at her wedding shower, it was a Harry Potter theme, so they took Ferrero Rochers and made little snitch wings, so they were glimpses.
Yeah, I bet you can make the snitch wings out of the, like, gold foil that they come in.
They just found some pattern on, like, Pinterest and printed it out and, like, glued them to them. But I'm going to have one of those because I don't get to have them very often, so I'm going to have one.
I'm going to have something. I'm not a big coconut fan, but this is a coconut candy. It's called Prestigio. And I think this is a Portuguese candy from Dario. And it looks like Twix. But I'll bet you it's a Twix with, yeah, it's all coconut in it. So what are those, it looks like a peppermint patty, but it's just all coconut. Almond joy, it looks like an almond joy without almonds.
I always forget there's a hazelnut in the middle of this. And I'm just like, oh, there's something hard. Oh, yeah.
This is exactly like I thought. It's chocolate and coconut. It's not bad. Not a big coconut fan, though, but it's pretty good. The coconut kind of has a toasty flavor to it, too, so that's better.
For me, it depends on the coconut. Sometimes I really like coconut, sometimes I don't. I
have to be in the right mood.
I like coconut and pina coladas. Does that count?
I guess. I'm not big on the coconut in drink form, but
I like in, like, smoothies, like, when it's, like, pineapple, like, when it's mixed with fruit and stuff, and coconut flavoring and stuff, but when it's just, like, and I like coconut chips, too. I like taking, like, little coconut chips and mixing in yogurt and stuff, but, like, just straight up coconut, it's not one of my favorites.
I like the Hostess Snowballs. They're like the chocolate cake with cream filling inside and then like marshmallow on top with coconut on top of it. Those are pretty good.
I don't even know if I ever had one.
Those are good. Snowballs. Like snow spelled S-N-O.
But a lot of the Hostess stuff, we never got a lot growing up. So some of it I've had, like there's the little chocolate roll things. Love those. Man. But I haven't had a lot of like different Hostess stuff because like, now that I'm older, like, I'll be like, let me buy this thing, and I'll bite into it, and I'm just like, oh, it's so sweet!
It's too sugary, yeah.
They're super sure. I think I would have loved them as a kid.
No,
but
the snowballs are awesome because it's a textural thing too. They got all kinds of little textures going on, and they're really good. They're really sweet though too.
The thing you can't beat though is fucking oatmeal cream pies.
Those are
the best. Those are the absolute best. I love them.
We had homemade whoopie pies that Chris Tyler's mom made last time we were at Dario's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were good.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website. You can tell because it says .com at the end and has our name at the beginning. And that's where all our podcasts are warehoused. Just like that giant Area 51 warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark in the beginning of the Crystal Skull. Except it's podcasts and not arcs and alien bodies. Although we might have a couple alien bodies, but we don't talk about that. And we have just 8 million billion zillion podcasts of every different flavor. When you go to our Two True Freaks page, you can see a list of them all. And you can see our Amazon link where you can order stuff on Amazon and help us out with money. And we have a Facebook page. That's Two True Freaks Facebook page. And there's a Two True Freaks Cantina there. We got a Twitter page. Two True Freaks at Twitter. Run by Gene Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene!
And, yeah, that's about it. You could go there. You can find me on Facebook if you can figure out what my fake Facebook name is and friend me. Shoot me a friend request. I'll be your friend. If you can find me. Hope you're a lot easier to find, though. You actually use your own name. So where can they find you?
Actually, I was looking between the two episodes. I wasn't sure where one and done. I remember these now, and I thought they were much later in the series. They are linked, but they do work as one and done.
Oh, okay.
One does lead
into the
last
two,
the
you mean?
No, the two, I was like, there's a four-parter, and then there was two. I wasn't sure if they were one and done, and then there's another two-parter. They are technically a two-parter. They are linked, but they do both stand as one and done.
Okay.
So I thought that one came in season 5, but I was wrong. They're right now, so in this season. So, they work as one and done. They are a two-parter. Anyway.
Excellent.
You can find me at JSNJedi. I run our Twitter account. I'm very excited for Rebels to get started because I'm going to start live-tweeting Rebels again, and I'm so excited. My only thing is now Rebels is on Mondays. Yay. Let me record. I'm not over that. And you can also find me at HookMolnex on Twitter. And I'm also the news writer for What the Fangirl, and you can find me over there. So, yay! That's all I got.
Yeah, come back next week when Obi-Wan Kenobi goes deep undercover and things get really goofy and weird.
You've seen this episode. I know, because I know you've
I've seen at least parts of this episode because I remember the storyline to it and remember seeing it, and I remember it was really, really... It was one of those crazy ones, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I think this is also... Yeah, it's the return of Cad Bane. Yay! I love
Finally.
Cad Bane. I know! I am so excited because I fucking love Cad Bane.
Who doesn't?
So, alright, well... That's all I have, so just remember, kids, if you piss off Ahsoka, you'll never get ahead in life.
Don't slap Ahsoka on the butt.
You
don't
might
do it. People end up decapitated. Depacketated.
It's hard to... I ran out of jokes. I guess I should stop making jokes before it comes to a head.
Oh!
One more.
All right, that's where we cut it. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there.
If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.